IVM.
Folks, welcome to Paisa Paisa. I'm your host Anubhav Gupta, B50 on Twitter. And today's episode, I'm thrilled, really thrilled to have for the very first time, Canara Robeco Mutual Fund and my guest, Avnish Jain, Head Fixed Income at Canara Robeco Mutual Fund. We're going to talk about fixed income debt funds, this whole, you know, the whole tax rule and much more right after this short break. Avnish, welcome to Paisa Paisa. Thank you so much for doing this for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you very much and happy to be here on your show.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've looked it up on YouTube and I find a lot of good things on that.
Thank you.
So thank you for having me.
It's really good to have you because you're the right man, right place, right time, everything.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, we are now in mid-April and end March 2023 is when this nice curveball was thrown on the entire industry. Did the mutual fund industry on the debt side expect it, especially the fact that it came outside the budget? Was it a surprise? How did you guys take it?
I think it was a out of blue bolt from the heavens, I would say. And nobody expected it. It's never been on the minds of people that this could be done away with, because it was something which was there for as a concession to mutual funds so they could grow, and it helped them growth from retail side. So I remember that day waking up and getting these messages that these tax changes happened. And I said, probably it's some kind of a deep fake which is happening. And so I called up a few people. He said, hey, something is there. Can you confirm it? And by the time I reached office, most of the news channels were putting it on. And by 9:30, we were sure that, it's gone right now for that.
So folks, what we're talking about, of course, is the change, the amendment to the income tax bill that came in. It came, if I remember, on 24th March, exactly 1 week before the financial year end, that took away the benefits that the debt mutual funds had over other categories, which is that long-term capital gains would be calculated after 3 years with the benefit of indexation. And now 3 years is also gone, indexation is also gone, and whether you hold a debt mutual fund for 1 day or 1 year or 10 years, it doesn't matter. Everything is short-term capital gains.
Yes, absolutely right. You're absolutely
so
right.
You know, the one thing that I was not able to get was that the debt mutual fund industry plays a very vital role in creating liquidity for the debt markets, and we know that India's debt markets need that kind of liquidity for retail savings to come in. And when demonetization happened, the debt mutual fund industry was among the biggest beneficiaries, you know. So for this to come in, what happens now? You know, how do you see things going
so,
forward?
I think, yes, it's a speed bump. I think, but the industry is pretty still growing. If you look at assets, if you look at banking assets, fixed deposits are around 180 lakh crores. In debt, I think put together, we are about 10% of that, about 15-16 lakh crores. So we are very, very small percentage of fixed deposit percentage as an asset class. So yes, definitely it will impact flows. But what we are seeing is that if you look at the breakup of the industry, almost 65% is institutional business, because most of the money, large amounts of chunks of money comes in your money market funds, your liquid funds, etc., etc. 30-35% is retail plus HNIs, and where possibly the tax advantage was of a benefit. That part, I think, will take a bit of a hit. Institutional will continue to invest because that is the option they have, because banks will not give you money on current accounts. They'll never pay you anything. So I think industry probably will feel a bit of slow growth this year, but mutual funds continue to present a viable option for investors as an alternate investment or vehicle, and that will continue to be there in the future.
Any trends from the last week of March and the first 2 weeks of April, anything that's, you know, caused any disruption so far, any initial trends?
In fact, we thought there could be, because earlier there was some confusion whether it is there's any grandfathering in amendment, but it was there. So we actually saw huge flows in the last week of March. I don't have the exact number, but probably around 25-30,000 crores of flows in fixed income funds. Data from RBI site shows that mutual funds bought over 19,000 crores of government bonds since March 25th to probably yesterday. So there have been good inflows, probably people trying to catch up on that tax benefits before it expires on 1st April or expired on 1st April. In terms of outflows, we haven't seen none, right? So probably because what will happen now is that people who are holding on to assets which are already there, they would want to continue to have that benefit. unless it becomes it's an emergency or they require the money, they will not withdraw that funds. Probably they will, what they invest now, they will try to withdraw that first. It will be instead of FIFO, it will become LIFO, last in, first out. You want to protect whatever tax concessions you are getting as long as possible.
Yeah. And if I want to understand what has not changed, okay, so for example, we know for a fact that when you take away indexation, you're taking away the impact of inflation. So let's say that a mutual fund or debt mutual fund, let's say on average earns 7% a year for 3 years and inflation is at 5%. So there's a 2% markup that you have or other benefit that you have straight away out there. And taxation would impact you to that extent. So now, when I look at debt mutual funds in my asset allocation, what is still the same for me and what has changed? Like, I've probably lost, what, 100 basis points of what I would have to assume?
Yeah, on a yearly basis, probably you are right on that number. You would lose that extra benefit which you had when you held for 3 years. But in terms of, if we compare with an FD or something, in terms of mutual fund, what mutual fund vehicle provides is liquidity, easy liquidity, because FDs for retail investors especially, there's a pre-penalty clause if you withdraw early, there's a clause, you have to pay a penalty. And you only get interest rate for the period you're holding. So if you're holding for 1 year, but you want to withdraw in 3 months, you'll get interest for 3 months. For mutual funds, whatever return you get in 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, you'll get that at any point of time you exit. So that is first point. Second is there is always an upside to your investments because especially in a current scenario where rates are expected to go down probably in a year's time, you could make much more because there will be some element of capital gains in your mutual funds or in your funds. Thirdly, obviously the diversification because your investments are in very good corporates. So you get a lot of safety. So I think these points put together really still stand out for a mutual fund. Tax advantage, yes, was one good pillar. But I think there are the 3-4 pillars which are there for a mutual fund, for an investor to look at a mutual fund as an alternate.
And that hasn't changed really.
That hasn't changed. Nothing else changed. Yeah.
So folks, you know, if you're someone who's considering between a fixed deposit and debt mutual fund, I think what still stays the same is when you're going in for a debt mutual fund, the liquidity is there. That has not changed at all.
Yeah.
That, you know, the fact that there are two components for a debt mutual fund, as I'm sure all of you guys know, which is first is the capital depreciation part, which is dependent on the interest rates. That hasn't changed because debt mutual fund will be on that. And second is the return, which gets invested back in a debt mutual fund. So if you're someone who's, if I have to put it in a certain way, over a 10-year period, the taxation for a debt mutual fund now changes at the end of it. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, whereas for a FD, it's each and every year the interest.
So you're right. Just to put it in a nutshell, in FD, you actually taking income as interest income. Well, in debt mutual funds, you're taking it at the capital gains, and you have the flexibility of determining when you want to book that capital gains, because then you can manage your tax better in a way over the years. And you can always choose to postpone it for 5 years, 7 years. Probably something changes over years, and you can benefit from that.
Yeah, yeah. So folks, honestly, you know, and if you're considering any investment for your corpus or an asset allocation or diversification is important, what Avni just mentioned, please don't have tax as your central angle or logic for investing, honestly, because we have had enough instances of the government taking and giving away, you know. And they have this thing of giving a benefit and suddenly it's gone. We've had it with equities, for God's sake. I mean, we've had that shock come into the equities part, now you've had it in the debt part. So, you know, in my opinion, one shouldn't use tax as the central investment idea for, you know.
Yeah, so what we are seeing is government is trying to move away from tax advantages, especially if you look at insurance. Also they have done away with putting a cap on how much money you can invest. So I think government is looking at ways of making sure that if people invest, it is because of the right reasons and not because of tax only.
I think purana da mana chala gaya ki you would be smarter than the government when it comes to tax. Government has become smarter than you when it comes to tax. You will be caught at some point of time, all of us, not just you. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, folks, so we're going to take a small break out here. We're going to come back on the other side with the whole macro part and, you know, what's looking good on the debt mutual funds, what you should be looking at, interest rate cycles and much more right after this short break. Okay, Avnish, let's get into the macro part now. Your outlook on the economy and obviously related to that on inflation. I'll get into the interest rates part later. But economy and inflation, where we are now, mid-April, going forward for the next 1 year.
So, obviously, there are two parts of the growth story because you can't talk about growth and inflation in India without talking about global scenario. So, obviously, I think every month something new pumps out, right? Jumps out. If you look at everything was going hunky-dunky moratorium in US in January and February. And suddenly March, you have those SVBs and the First Republic Bank and the collapse of few banks. And then that triggered a kind of, I think, expectation of some contagion. And immediately, I think Europe also, we saw CS getting taken over by, or like there was a shotgun marriage by the central bank to UBS. So that kind of, I think, shook up the markets a bit and put on hold. I think the Fed rate hike was slowed down by 25 bips. So globally, I think what we are seeing is finally the impact of a large increase in rates in last 1 year, especially we look at the Federal Reserve of 5 percentage points, is starting taking impact. Some of the numbers which are coming, especially if you look at US, while the labor market is strong, but some other numbers are showing housing market is slowing down and other high frequency numbers are also showing slowdown. Inflation, thankfully, has been coming down, but not at the pace I think the Federal Reserve would want. And the core inflation still remains high in US. Coming to India, I think on the growth side, I think we are doing pretty well with the numbers we are seeing. We haven't seen a major impact as we have seen overseas on the growth, despite about 250 basis rate hike. And we assume we count the reverse repo rate hike. It's probably 315 basis rate hike by RBI in last 1 year. So clearly the RBI has been, there has been a kind of matching of steps between the global central banks. But RBI has been obviously more nuanced in the approach of not trying to hike as fast as Fed, because we were actually not very high from our inflation number. So we could take that step of not hiking so much. And I think obviously this policy was a bit of a surprise, because RBI stopped, citing reasons of saying that we want to see the effect of the 250 basis rate hike. And also, I think they were back of a mind, they were aware that there are global problems and they want to not unnecessarily hike if it is not required. So in terms of growth, I think RBI is cognizant that the growth numbers will slow down, but they're still penciling in 6.5% for next year, which is extremely good. So I think while the markets, if you see, there's anywhere numbers are anywhere between 5.5 to 6.5. So let's say we are looking at a number of 6.2 or something. Mm-hmm. Inflation, I think if you look at inflation, we'll get the number tomorrow. I think this will probably below 6%. So we are looking around 570, 75 range. And then the April, May, June numbers will drop to below 5% or near 5% because of base effect. So that will give RBI some room to really hold on to rates for probably a little longer. And then rest of the year, inflation probably will creep up a bit to around 5.25, but will probably stay there. So there is no need to anyway look at further rate hikes, but RBI obviously has kept the door open. But we believe that now once they have paused, the bar for rate hike is now pretty high. It will be either there's an ugly number in inflation after June, July, August, or some Federal Reserve doing more hikes and then they are forced to move in tandem a bit. So from that angle, I think rate hike, more or less, I think we are done. But again, rate cuts are still not on the horizon for us. Our growth remains strong, so we don't have a reason to really go on cutting rates, because growth is not faltering at that rate.
Yeah.
Even if it comes down, it will still be a good 6% number.
Yeah. On a scale of hawkish to dovish, what do you think this governor is? Because, you know, we're in 2023, this is very different from the 2000s when inflation was hot, the economy was hot, you know, and then you had the 2010s, a very different scenario. You had the taper tantrum and all that. Yeah. And now here you are in 2023, we've come out of the pandemic. But, you know, I always feel that the macro outlook on growth is like, there are people who are very, very excited, the people who are very, very cautious. Where do you think the governor is on all this? Because, you know, I think the state of the economy report was also out a couple of weeks ago. And it was a very bullish report from what I could, you know, from what I could figure out. Given that, you think this pause will go on for a while?
Yeah, so I think governor is pretty balanced in his approach. When there is some sort of contagion expectation, or could be, right, like from the global market, I think he would like to pause and see what's going to happen. Anyway, rate hikes, they have already delivered 250 basis. 25 here and there is probably at the margin, not going to make much of a difference except in the psychology of people. So that can be weighed down and waited on and see how things go. And I think they will follow what's happening in the market, the data. I think at 6.5%, we are almost 100 basis positive real rate. So that should keep the economy from heating up further, to put it that way. There would be a slowdown because the pent-up demand now, I think, is more or less kind of over. So we would not see continued demand in that way. And sooner or later, you will see some softening in demand across the economy. So I think it's kind of a balancing act from the governor.
So now moving to interest rates, do you think the cycle has peaked? And now we're looking at, you know, if the RBI itself is going to be paused for a long time, do you think that for interest rates also, this is pretty much as good as it gets? Or is there maybe some upward pressure here or anything? What's your view on the cycle?
Okay, so I think interest rates, you're right, they mostly look like peaking now, peaked. So we have two segments. One is the government bonds and one is the corporate bond segment. If you look at government bonds, the supply obviously this year is higher than last year. It's manageable, but still it'll exert some pressure. So what it'll do, what we call the curve steepening, where longer term rates rise more because there's more supply there and there's less demand there. So you would see some pressure there. Short term rates will probably not move so much higher from here because your repo rate is now more or less fixed. So expectations of a pause even for a prolonged period of time does not move too much on the short term rates. Corporate bond, I think market, the supply side has been pretty subdued post-pandemic. I think 2019, after that, the supply fell very sharply. But demand continued to rise because there was huge inflow of money from fiscal and from government and from RBI. So the demand of corporate paper continued to rise, while demand, the supply did not rise as fast. So corporate supply is still limited and there is less pressure on corporate rates. So corporate rates, I think, more or less peaked. So you might see some upward pressure on the long end of the government bond curve, but I think more or less, I think the market is not going to move that much in the near term.
So, you know, I have this thing that I always imagine that an equity fund manager and a debt fund manager walk into a bar, okay? Or let's say they're at a party. There used to be a time when all the attention used to go to the equity mutual fund. I think now if you talk to them, they're kind of, you know, thanda lag raha hai, this, that and all. But the debt mutual fund guy is very excited because everybody's going to him now. And the question over and over again that I'm going to give to you now is, what should our listeners do? You know, what's your recommendation now? If the interest rate cycle has peaked, then what's the best way to lock in into these rates? And there are a whole lot of instruments available out there for everyone to invest in, you know, from RBI direct to debt mutual funds to fixed deposits. Just give us, what's your overall recommendation on the products that our listeners should be looking at now?
So I always say that you should diversify your portfolio. So I'll never say don't invest in bank and free because that does give you a little of safety and guaranteed returns kind of product. Directly owning bonds for investors, that's somewhat tricky because most of the bonds, bond pricing, you don't understand. So unless you can actually get down on a sheet and calculate the yield you are buying it at, you should not delve into that too much unless you are pretty sure of what you are doing. Also on the exchange, the bonds trade on a dirty price basis. Now, again, I don't want to explain clean price.
No, you should, because that's an important one for our listeners. I like the term dirty price. So it's a very important concept, Ravneet. Just give us a short explanation to our listeners, what's a dirty price and what's a clean price.
Okay. So clean price is, the price of a bond which generally traded in the wholesale market. Okay. So dirty price is just because every bond has a coupon. So as the day become, as the maturity increases to the next coupon, there is always accumulation of what we call the accrual of interest rate happens on a daily basis. So for example, if you have an annual coupon of 8%, then after 6 months, you have accumulated 4% coupon.
Correct.
So let's say the price of the bond, clean price is 100 rupees and the bond is 6 months near the next coupon date. So 4 rupees is accumulated as a accrued coupon, what we call accrual.
Yeah.
So when you talk about dirty price, the dirty price is 100 plus 4. So it is 104. That is what actually you pay if somebody sells, because you will be getting the coupon in the future. So you actually pay him for the accrual, which has already happened. So that is a dirty price. And on the exchange, it trades on dirty price. So actually, when you do the bond mathematics, when you do the final calculation, you need to remove the dirty price. So I think all these put together, you should know that in an XRR calculation, actually you use a dirty price. When you use the clean price, you have to add back the coupon and or the accrual and then calculate the dirty price and do the calculation.
Yeah. Folks, this is important. Okay. So I, go back and listen to what Abhi said, because I know that the RBI has given the retail direct platform for investors. I know that I signed up when it came out and I'm really excited by it, but bond pricing is tricky. It's not like stock market. When you call up your broker, you see on CNBC and the price that you see, the price that you get. The dirty price and clean price concept are very important because they decide the cost of what you are buying on that RBI retail direct platform. And believe me, if you don't have those concepts crystal clear, please, you know, just reconsider that. Please please go on.
So another tricky point, which is there in bonds, corporate bonds per se, because government bonds, that's not there, is what we call the closing period, 15 days before it goes. And sometimes on exchange, it may keep trading at the same price, but you'll not get the coupon. So actually, you lose out a lot. So all these things you need to keep in mind when you are trading in bonds. So I would suggest that unless you are pretty familiar with bond pricing, you should not directly buy from exchanges. Second is liquidity on the exchange. The bid-ask itself kills you, actually. Pay brokerage on that. If you pay 1% brokerage on your bond, you have you're out 20 basis points. So actually, you should not buy. You can buy in primary markets, and you can buy and keep for buy to held to maturity kind. You want to hold till maturity. That is the option you can take. And then mutual funds obviously are the best, not because I am working there, but it's a very simple product. Like, you don't worry about all the calculations. We do them for the investors, and you just look at the NAV. NAV to NAV, what the return you get is what the return you get. So there is no complication. And you can redeem on T+1 basis any point of time. You can invest on T+1 basis any point of time. Some funds will have some lock-in exit periods, but it's not all of them. And I think in terms of funds, it depends on your investment horizon. Like, if you, let's say, for example, you have money lying in savings fund earning 3%, you can put in liquid fund right now and earn 6% or 6.5%, depending on the market conditions. And you can withdraw money on T+1 basis. So short term, you can put money there. Then there are short term funds. There are corporate bond funds. And then there are banking PSU debt kind of funds, which are typically for 2 years, 3 years kind of maturity holding. But now, because there is no tax benefit, you can hold for as long as you want, you want your money. Or sometimes you can take a market call also. For example, if we believe that in next 1 year rates are going to come down, you can invest now in mid-duration funds or long-duration funds. And if that prognosis comes correct, you could also make a good capital gains. And then you can exit after 1.5-2 years, because then the tax thing is not there. You anyway are going to pay full tax.
Yeah. So I want to get into this thing, mid-duration and long-duration. What are typically the names of these debt mutual funds? Okay, because I know the debt mutual funds are there across the scheme. Like you said, you've got the short-term liquid. Those are as per the sticker. When they say liquid, you know what it is.
Yeah.
You've got the credit risk funds, which are the same sticker, as per what it says. And you've got the G-Secs or the longer-term ones, which are as it's said. What are mid- and long-term duration funds, if you can just help us there?
So, I think about 2017-18, SEBI came out with the categorization circular where they bracketed funds in various categories to ensure that investors don't get confused, because there are plethora of funds at that point of time, and people were selling funds as they desired depending on the market conditions. So essentially, you have a category starting from overnight, where it only invests in overnight. Then there's a liquid. Then there's ultra short. Then there's a low duration fund, short duration fund. Then you get into the mid duration fund, mid to long duration funds, then long duration fund. And then there's dynamic and gilt.
Sure.
And then you have some thematic funds like corporate bond fund and banking PSU debt funds. So from a perspective of, if we look at a more larger kind of categorization, we call money market funds are liquid and savings and ultra short. And then short duration corporate bond, banking PSU can be considered a mid to long duration funds.
Okay.
And the long duration are like income funds or dynamic bond funds and gilt funds. So typically, if you are a new investor and you want to park your money for, say, 1.5-2 years, then a short duration corporate bond fund or a banking PSU debt fund is a good option.
Yeah. So folks, I want to just take a bit of a pause out there and ask Avnish about one thing, because I always find a bit of confusion with the listeners on the concept of accrual versus capital gain.
Okay.
For people who just look at 8% FD and they actually just want that. You know, they want to put maybe a lakh out there and get 8K a year or whatever the numbers is versus the person who says that I want to play the cycle. Now, folks, you got to be very clear what you're investing in debt, because if you're someone who's looking for that payout every year, year after year, or whatever, 6 months, every 6 months, then you need to look at different products.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be looking at debt funds for that, honestly, because debt funds are more of the second category, which is playing the cycle and playing the capital gains part. Could you just help us out here on the products on both the sides?
Yeah, so if you're looking at capital gains, so again, it is always capital gains is a function of your duration, or to put it plainly, maturity of the fund. Duration is a function of maturity. So we will not go into a big kind of jargon and say only average maturity of the fund.
Yeah.
So let's say you have 8% yield on the fund and you have a duration of, say, 3 years. In 1 year, if interest rates go down by, say, 50 basis points, so you earn a capital gains of 1.5%. So you actually in 1 year making a total return of 8 plus 1.5, which is 9.5%, which you wouldn't have made in a FD.
Correct.
So that is the extra you earn, and like you were saying, playing the cycle. And obviously there will be time where rates go up and you could end up losing a bit.
Yeah.
But if you hold on for long enough, you should gain a bit here and there on the duration.
Sure.
Then there are the longer duration funds which run at probably 4 or 5 years. And you can imagine if 50 basis, you could add another percentage point if your duration is higher.
Yeah.
And that is how people, the smart people want to play on the debt funds.
Yeah. Last two questions here on the product side. Is one is active versus passive. What's your view on that? Because now, you know, 10 years ago, there was no passive in debt. If you had to go into debt, you would have to go into, you know, a fund where you're taking a call on the interest rate cycle or the period or the duration and stuff. Now there is also a reasonably large passive debt fund market that's out there. What would be your recommendation to listeners looking at both these things, active and passive?
So I think passive came out, again, because of the tax benefit, I would say largely. Because you are holding for 3+ years or 4 or 5 years, and you assume that after 3 or 4 years, 1 or 2 interest rate cycles, you should be net zero, but you will get the tax advantage. But now with that tax advantage gone, active funds will become much more popular simply because you can increase duration when rates are going down, cut duration when rates are going up, and manage it actively so that you are able to add something of value in terms of returns to the investors' funds. And I think passive will should go out of favor, because I think last 2 years, one, because the rates were very low and 5-6 year rates were higher. So people thought that you can get higher return and still get some tax benefit. But now with the rate curve flat, I think active funds will do much better. So okay. I think investors should look at active funds.
Okay. And the second thing that I have is again a concept that's come up in the last couple of years that a lot of listeners are asking about is laddering. You know, how does the concept work? And you know, if someone were to come to you and ask you that if you could set up a 10-year laddering thing, what would that look like?
Okay, so laddering simply means that you buy bonds, say, for if you're investing for 5 years and you have the all the bonds available of different maturities, depending on your cash requirements or whatever, you buy bonds every 3 month maturity or 6 months, like you buy money market for 3, 6, 12 months, and then every bond 1.5, 2 years. So there is a maturity every 3 months, let's say, for example. It is more popular for fund management because in debt funds, liquidity is very important, because we have seen a lot of episodes where liquidity becomes an issue and you want to be sure that liquidity management is done properly. Laddering is one way of doing it. So a portfolio, you can, instead of selling every time and not able to sell, you want to have maturities in your portfolio at a fixed, not a fixed time period, but nearby, like every 1 week, 2 weeks, 5 weeks. If you're talking about, depending on the fund size, but for a personal portfolio, I think laddering, it may matter, may not matter. Like I say, if you invest in mutual funds, you can take a call anytime.
Yeah. And you could just, you know, let the fund manager,
take the pain.
Yeah. That's, if you're doing a debt mutual fund, then honestly, like Avnisha, there are so many categories for you to consider. Rather than going into laddering, which if you understand and you're aware of how it works, then please, of course, go for it. I personally, my understanding of debt market funds.
I think second, coming back to, again, the bond mathematics and the illiquidity in the debt markets, unless you HNI, you can trade in larger amounts. It is not worth for the retail investor who is putting 5 lakhs, 10 lakhs or something like that. It is, like, I myself can't trade in the retail market. I try to do that. But the bid-ask spread and all, you lose a lot of return on that, because when you trade in equity, you don't mind losing 1 or 2 rupees here and there. But in debt, that is your whole return.
So let me just recap this entire discussion so far for our listeners. You said mid too long is looking reasonably good for you in the entire cycle, which is about 5 to 7 years. And within that, what would you prefer? Would you prefer a short-term fund or a corporate credit risk fund, or, you know, what banking PSU, what do you think would...
Okay, so as a fund house, credit side, we have been very careful. We never ventured into credit. We were proved and proven right from 2018 onwards that credit is per se not wrong, but credit has an inherent problem. It is illiquid. Illiquid means absolutely illiquid. And when you want to, when there's a redemption pressure or something, then difficult to sell. So we took the call that credit we'll not do because the market is not conducive for doing credit. So our funds are very high rated AAA funds. So we do that. And I think short duration typically has a 1.5-2 year duration. Corporate bond 2 to 3 years duration, and banking PSU similar. So I think these funds are good for investors who want to do a dipstick in the mutual fund market away from FDs and don't want too much risk. So that is suitable for those investors. For other investors who are already there, I think, same kind of products, and they can probably venture into dynamic and gilt funds, taking advantage of expected downward movement of yields.
Yeah. So folks, there you go. Diversify in debt, as you should also do with your entire portfolio. And when you are diversifying within your debt category, then look at FDs, okay? Probably very, very high quality FDs out there which offer you reasonably good, you know, the person behind it has to be a very high rating. Look at debt mutual funds, which I think should be the thrust of this entire episode so far. There's a whole wide variety of things for you to look out there. As Avnish said, he's not someone who likes to go on the credit side, which basically means that you'll go at the rating side or the time side. And there you've got a lot of stuff to choose from, as Avnish said. Directly, RBI retail, you know, just please figure your stuff out. It's a little bit complex even now for a lot of people. And yeah, I think that's it, right? I mean, we've covered pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Interest rate cycles have peaked. So this is probably a good time for you to just, you know, sit down, take an Excel sheet, figure out what your priorities are, get your asset allocation right, diversify. And the last process in that is security selection of that debt mutual funds. We've given you an entire episode on that. And we'll, you know, we're probably going to look at it deeper in Paisa Paisa as we go along. Avnish, last question, standard question to all my guests who come out here. Any book recommendations? Or anything interesting that you're reading?
So
or watching,
I'll recommend a book called The Bond King. I heard about William H. Gross, Bill Gross.
Of course, PIMCO.
He was PIMCO. So he's the considered actually kind of person who started the bond markets in US in 1970s. So it pretty much talks about a lot of his background and what happens. So obviously, his company was like a boiler room, right? So it's a good perspective on bond markets, and probably they are more complex than equity markets.
Definitely. That much I can say.
And, it's a good book on his persona, because obviously he was eased out in 2014-15 sometime. I tried to join another firm, but I think finally retired in 2019 sometime, but he's still worth a lot. And but he's considered a guy who, I grew up when I started my bond markets. So Gross was always on the list of what he's writing. He used to write a monthly investment outlook. And like the day it was published, we were supposed to read
it. Page to page, word page, for word.
It was not big. It was about 2 pages or something. And I remember reading it every month and just waiting for the next one to come, because you, in those times where you could not really understand what's happening in markets and US, what's happening in US. Now there's information flow is much more higher. That time it was pretty limited. Although good to get perspectives on what's happening globally and how they're going to, how everything, macroeconomic factors impact interest rates. So it was it's a good book.
Yeah. And I think the debt mutual fund, even in the US, has been among the biggest bull runs across any category of assets ever.
Yeah, the 30-40 year bull run. Now it is,
We started in the 80s, I would say, at what, about 10-12% on the long bond. Came to almost all the way to zero.
Zero, almost 1.5%.
Yeah, so just look at that. I mean, from 12% to 1.5%, that's the kind of bull market you want in debt. And that's, again, remember that in debt, it's the other way around. You know, the asset prices and interest rates move in different directions. But yeah, man, that's why I love the debt markets. It's always much more complex to understand than equities. And that is a wrap on this episode of Paisa Paisa. My guest, Avnish Jain, head fixed income at Canara Robeco Mutual Fund. Avnish, thank you so much for doing this for our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me here. Hope I am able to come back again to your show.
I will be very happy to have you back on the show. Avnish, the book recommendation, folks, IBM guys, is The Bond King. Thank you, Saurabh, for that. The Bond King. And come on, you guys have to know Bill Gross. If you don't, then just go and Google him up. You know, it's fascinating story out there. But thank you, Avnish. Hope to have you back soon at Paisa Vaisa.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And listeners, if you like this podcast, please do become a Club Paisa Vaisa subscriber. You get full archive access, early access to episodes, ad-free experience, and bonus content in the form of my takes on each episode, ₹699 a year intro offer. And you can check out other interesting podcasts on the IBM Network. You can listen to us on the IBM Podcast app or ibmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are IBM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm your host, Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter. Thank you so much, folks, for listening to Paisa Vaisa.
No material on the show should be considered as financial advice. The material on the show is for informational purposes only. Please consult a financial advisor before taking any investment decision.